Hello and welcome back to the What Is Football podcast. I'm Owen Murray and I'm flying solo today because Lathan is not able to be here. We're going to be going through the Prem opening weekend fixtures. We're going to be talking the UEFA Player of the Year and Manager of the Year nominees and just some general rest of the world stuff. And I have a book for you guys at the end. See you after the break. All right, so welcome back to the What Is Football podcast, and today is going to look at analyzing the opening weekend of the Premier League, and let's just jump right in with Manchester United 5-1 Leeds. It was a blowout, but I'd like to preface it by saying that because of the way Leeds play with their man marking, it really compromises them against a Manchester United team that when they are in form like this, they can find those spaces, and it really makes it hard for Leeds to play against them. So while some people might be quick to jump to criticize Leeds, I don't think that they're gonna have a terrible season. I think that they should still definitely aim to get that top 10 spot. That said, Bruno scored a hat trick, got me lots of fantasy points, and Pogba had 4 assists, so it's great to see, especially Pogba proving his haters wrong, and really, really happy to see that. Varane was unveiled finally and before the game, and he was not able to play, neither was Cavani, but we saw Mason Greenwood, we saw Jadon Sancho off the bench, we saw Dan James, and we also saw a back four with Wan-Bissaka on the right. So that was, we were talking about earlier on the pod how we might see a back three or five with Wan-Bissaka as that right center back, but that was not what we saw today. That still could be something to come in the future. It could be maybe selective against a team that Solskjaer would use that against for a tactical use, but it doesn't look like that's going to be their everyday formation. Moving on to another game this weekend, we saw Manchester City lose to Spurs 1-0. This was really a fantastic performance from Spurs. We saw great performances from Heung-min Son, Lucas, and Japhet Tanganga especially. He pocketed Grealish and Sterling for all of 70 minutes, I believe, and then he came off. But he was really a fantastic player, and one of the main reasons why after that first 15 minutes where Manchester City really dominated and looked like they would have scored, and they should have scored, that they just weren't a threat in that way that you expected and that you saw last season. Ferran Torres started as the 9 for Manchester City, which meant they were lacking sort of a focal point up front. He was making good runs, but we really didn't see sort of that figure in sort of an Aguero mold, or it should be said a Harry Kane mold. Harry Kane didn't play this match, and he was, I think, in the stands. They never showed him, but he is still training. Nuno said it was, I think, an injury concern. He just wasn't match fit, and Manchester City will almost certainly step up their pursuit of Kane after this performance, because it's really looking like they need that 9 if they get it. Well, so long for the rest of the Premier League. Yet, who scored the game's lone goal? It was a really good goal. It was just well taken, and Spurs were able to capitalize on their opportunities. And really, what they did was they were able to stifle the defending champions very, very well, which is something they'll have to look to do, because those games against the top 6 are going to be challenges for them. They're going to be going into the Conference League this week, and Nuno has said that Dan Scarlett's going to be starting up front, so we'll be watching his career with great, great interest. Very excited to see him start, but I don't know if he could be an option in place of Harry Kane if Kane leaves. There's been rumors about Lautaro coming in, but I think that Dan Scarlett could really be an option there, especially off the bench or in the Conference League, because Spurs will almost certainly be looking to go far there. So moving on to our third feature of the weekend, Chelsea 3-0 Palace. Pulisic scored, Trevor Shalaba scored, which we'll get on to in a little bit, and Marcus Alonso scored off a free kick, and he almost had another. Palace really didn't inspire Patrick Vieira's reign. It's an inauspicious start, really. It was always going to be tough against the defending Champions League winners, but it doesn't sound like they put... I wasn't able to personally watch the game, but it doesn't sound like they put up much of a fight. Zaha, I believe, started, but wasn't able to make too much of an impact, and especially because he has been looking to leave again. If they lose him, I think it's going to be really, really tough. That said, Chelsea were really good. Marcus Alonso with a free kick, Pulisic pouncing on a loose ball, and then Trevor Shalaba, which is the story of the weekend, scored a 30-yard incredible strike. The center back slash right back, he has been working his way up through the youth teams. He came from Cobham. It was just really, really awesome to see him score his goal, and hopefully he can crack on and do really, really well this year. I think that Tuchel will probably look to him maybe in the Carabao and FA Cups, if not as a rotation piece in the Premier League as part of that back three. Okay, and then now for the penultimate game. This was the opener, Arsenal versus Brentford, and Arsenal. I just have to say I feel terrible for Arsenal fans. If you haven't heard, Arsenal lost 2-0 to Brentford. They did not impress against the newly promoted side. Brentford playing with motivation. They're back in their home stadium for the first time in, I think, a year at least. The fans were back. It was the first game. It was a really emotionally charged game. Aubameyang and Lacazette were not able to be there. They didn't start. They didn't sub in. They were not on the bench because of illness. Which obviously struck a blow to Mikel Arteta's side, but still, they lost to Brentford. Yeah. It's going to be a long season, Arsenal fans. I'm sorry. Now on to our fifth and final feature game of the weekend, Liverpool versus Norwich. After a pretty close first half, Liverpool turned on the afterburners and they were able to put three in by the end against Norwich. Virgil van Dijk was back. He looked immense in defense. That's a great rhyme. And Norwich, I don't know if they're going to be able to... I mean, I think they're going to be able to fight to stay up. It was pretty obvious that the loss of Emi Buendia, even with Milo Urshica coming in, was going to be tough because they're losing their creative force. It's going to be the same for a club like Barcelona losing Messi. They're going to have to source their creativity from multiple people, because what Buendia did for them was really, really invaluable, but they weren't able to stop him leaving. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see where their creativity comes from. The American Josh Sargent came in the second half for about 20 minutes. He looked pretty good, but Norwich in the end just weren't able to put up a Liverpool. Liverpool are looking really good. Salah had a goal, Alisson had the assist, and just by the end they were able to kind of cruise to victory. It still stands to be seen how they're going to do against the top teams, but this is a really encouraging performance from Liverpool, just to be able to put away these games that at times last year they weren't able to put away because of those injuries and because just of the mentality that they had lost and the confidence that they didn't have. This section shouts out to West Ham, who picked up a 4-2 victory against Newcastle, and Jamie Vardy for some absolutely fantastic, just howling at the Wolves fans after he scored Leicester's lone goal of the match. It's just great to see Jamie Vardy back. To our second section of the podcast, where we're going to talk about the UEFA Player of the Year and Manager of the Year nominees. These came out this morning, last night. And so the Player of the Year nominees are Kevin De Bruyne of Manchester City in Belgium, N'Golo Kanté of Chelsea and France, and Jorginho of Chelsea and Italy. So De Bruyne obviously made it to the Champions League final with Manchester City. They lost there to Chelsea, the team of the other two nominees, and he made it to the quarterfinals, I believe, of the European Championships with Belgium. But the tough part was he was injured for a bit of this year, and he was injured going into the Euros, so it's really hard to judge like where he would have gone. That said, he was still incredibly impressive. He wasn't quite Kevin De Bruyne, which is why I don't think he's going to win this award, but he was still an incredibly impressive player and the key diamond for both of Manchester City and Belgium. But I think that these other two nominees have a stronger case. So N'Golo Kanté obviously wins the Champions League, wins player of the match in the final with Chelsea as they defeat De Bruyne's Manchester City, or maybe that was Havertz. He was my player of the match. But he was just simply everywhere this season. He's been getting Ballon d'Or shouts. And with France, although they didn't impress in the Euros and they went out in the round of 16 to Switzerland in that incredible upset, he was still an absolute key player for them. And I think that just the shuttling he does and what he brings to a team is invaluable. And that is why he could win Player of the Year. But honestly, I think that because a lot of this, similar to the Ballon d'Or, is just judged on what you win, it's going to be Jorginho. If you had said this before the seasons that started, I wouldn't have believed you, but he won the Champions League, and he was actually really integral player for Tuchel's side, especially after Tuchel came in and was able to sort of reshape that team and bring Jorginho back in. He also was that six for Italy as they made their run to the final and won it against England on penalties. He took a penalty in the shootout and missed, but he stepped in for Locatelli after being out for the group stage and just elevated Italy to that next level. Locatelli got a move off the back of that to Juventus, which we'll talk about hopefully in the next podcast. But seeing how Italy just got elevated after that, after Jorginho comes back into the round of 16, was just a further case for his Ballon d'Or, UEFA Men's Player of the Year candidacy, and I think that he's going to be the one that wins it. The Manager of the Year, we have Pep Guardiola of Manchester City, Roberto Mancini of Italy, the European champions, and Thomas Tuchel of Chelsea, the Champions League winners. So Pep, I think that his biggest claim to this award is that he was able to get Manchester City to a Champions League final with tactical innovation and without a recognized number nine. They didn't start a nine throughout much of both the Premier League and the Champions League. So just being able to have that tactical innovation, I think, shows that he is probably the greatest manager of all time and could elevate him to best manager this year. But I think that, similar to the last one, the Manchester City man just loses out a little bit to the further two nominees on the list. Roberto Mancini was able to bring Italy to that title of European champions, and I think that that's really important because of not only of his tactical know-how and because he was able to change the system after Leo Spinazzola went out, and he was just their entire left side pretty much. So being able to still push on after that with Emerson at left back was really impressive in how he was able to manage that tactically, but also because of the mentality that he installed in that team. This is the team that missed out on the Russia World Cup after being a mainstay. They were one of the top 10 teams in the world for the longest time, and they weren't able to even make the World Cup. And so Mancini comes in, and he is able to really just elevate this team back to the standard of, we are the Italians, we are here to win. And I think that he is really, really a good manager for that, and it's just a toss-up between him and Tuchel. I honestly can't choose, but Tuchel, he comes in, Chelsea are floundering in the league a little bit, they have this Champions League tie against Atletico Madrid, which doesn't look like they're going to win, nobody is favoring them, and he comes in, he installs this back three, he is able to get the best out of players like Jorginho, Conte, even Antonio Rudiger, and he inspires them to a Champions League final, and he's able to really have this team become what we thought they were going to be under Frank Lampard with all these new signings, Werner, Havertz, Pulisic pushed on. We love to see that as Americans, but I think that because of this, he combines sort of what we've seen from Pep as the tactical innovation with his back three and his formation changes and everything he does, and also the mentality to move on from where Chelsea were at Christmas, where they were really floundering, like I said, and nobody thought they were going to be able to do anything in the league. We're looking like, hopefully they can make the Champions League spots, but he's able to really motivate them, which I think that twofold is why he'll win Champions League, or UEFA Men's Coach of the Year. And it's just really impressive that Chelsea sweep it, but honestly, can we be surprised? They've been probably the best team. Well, obviously the best team in Europe. So just to finish off this nice little short podcast, we're just going to go around quickly to the rest of the world. Barcelona won 4-2 against Sociedad, even without Leo Messi. We saw Brathwaite scoring goals. We saw Pique. We saw Sergio Roberto. Memphis Depay was involved. It was really great to see Pique kiss the badge. After he got the assist from the man, he took a wage cut to be able to get registered. Barcelona are, I think, close to the top of the table right now, and hopefully they'll be able to stay there. It looks like it's definitely going to have to be more of a team effort without Messi, who is just completing his first week in Paris, and he's looking happy there. He's playing with Neymar. He's playing with Mbappe. It's going to be a tough week for, or a tough year, really, for those French teams ahead. But Barcelona, even though they might not be looking to contend for that Champions League, they are the most favored team by the odds to win La Liga this year, and honestly, even though other teams are looking strong, I think if they keep performing like this together, I think they can do it. Sociedad are a really strong team. They've got strong players, Mikel Merino, Mikel Oyarzabal, other people not named Mikel as well. But I think that it will have to be a team effort, but they, I think, can take La Liga, especially if they go out of Europe early, which I think could be a blessing in disguise for them. In addition to this, Real Madrid beat Alaves, and Atletico Madrid beat Celta Vigo, both good wins. All the top three are looking strong right now. It'll just be a test of strength, really. All the teams really will be looking to go deep into the Champions League, and I think it's really who will be able to fight on all three fronts. We also saw the opening weekend of the Bundesliga. Erling Haaland is a robot. He's insane. Whoever buys him next year for that $75 million release clause is going to get an absolute bargain. He's on 5 goals in 2 games. Dortmund, they won in the league, but they unfortunately lost to Bayern in the Super Cup. I think it was 3-1. Royce had the goal. Royce and Haaland combined for that lone goal for Dortmund, but Lewandowski, up to 24 goals in 24 games against his former club, was just pretty much unstoppable. Bayern are slowly working back to that monster we know they can be. And even though they're looking shaky, just this performance gives me hope that I think Bayern will still be able to crack on. It'll just be a question of, we got to see Malin on the pitch for a little bit. When Dortmund can integrate these new assets and find them in the team, and if they can really compete, especially if they, like Barcelona, go out of Europe early, I think that's going to be interesting to see in all the leagues, the balance that teams take between the Champions League and the league. So finally, just to close it off, I have a little book recommendation for you. We're going to try to do this on the solo podcasts. This is a book called The Sound and the Glory by Matt Pence. It's about our hometown team, the Seattle Sounders, and their run to the championship in 2016. If you've heard about them, they were second bottom of the league. The coach got fired, and they hired the hometown guy, the guy who used to run the sports store, Brian Schmetzer, and he was able to write this title run with the new player Nicola Dero that is so well chronicled by Matt Pence, who's an incredible writer. He tells great stories. He's inside the Sounders all the time, so you'll be able to get those inside stories and kind of really how it feels to be part of that championship run. And if you love a Cinderella story, this is the book for you. The Sound at Heart, or The Sound and the Glory by Matt Pence, how the Seattle Sounders showed Major League Soccer how to win over America. All right, so thank you so much for listening to this episode of the What is Football podcast. We talked about the Premier League opening weekend. We talked about the UEFA Men's Player of the Year and the Manager of the Year, some rest of the world stuff, and of course the book The Sound and the Glory. Definitely pick that one up. I really enjoyed it. I hope you will too. Thank you. Let us know if you enjoyed this opening weekend, and have a good time. Thank you for listening.